I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources, Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is April 7th, 2022. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take the attendance by roll.
Chair Hansen is present. Vice Chair Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz present.
Wasilewicz present. Representative Heintzman. Representative Heintzman. Looks like he's joining now. Representative Akam.
Akam present.
Representative Ackland.
Ackland present.
Representative Backer.
Backer present.
Representative Becker Finn.
Becker Finn present.
Representative Ackland.
Present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Green.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Igo present.
Representative Jordan. Representative Jordan. Representative Keeler.
Keeler present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lewick.
Lewick present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Present. Representative Tice.
Tice present.
And Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Jordan present.
Jordan present.
Sorry, I was having audio issues.
Gotcha. Everyone's here.
Quorum is present. Next up, Representative Tice, would you like to move the minutes for April 5th?
So moved, Chair.
Representative Tice, move the minutes for April 5th, 2022. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. Ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Handing the gavel over to Vice Chair Wasilewicz.
All right, on the agenda for today, we're going to be talking about our omnibus bill here, and Rep. Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will move that House File 4492 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee, and I will move the DE4 amendment.
Representative Hansen has moved the DE4 amendment to get it before the committee. And now, at this point, we're going to move to testimony on the DE4 amendment. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Representative Hansen, before we move to that?
Nope, let's go.
All right, first up on the list is Katrina Kessler, a commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Ms. Kessler, if you can introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, I am Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Commissioner Kessler. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 4492D amendment.
Commissioner Kessler, your audio is cutting in and out. We can't hear. We're hearing about every third word.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I think if you just maybe just stay a little closer to the camera,
I'll just get really close. All right.
Thanks.
I would like to thank Chair Hansen and the members for their work on the DE bill, especially the inclusion of several of the Walz-Flanagan recommendations that pertain to the MPCA. The MPCA shares the author and the committee's interests and concerns regarding pressing issues such as PFAS, climate adaptation, and our growing waste problem. I appreciate that the committee was able to partial funding for the governor's proposal to establish climate adaptation action grants and expand waste prevention, recycling, and composting grants. In addition, I'm encouraged to see the robust set of proposals recognizing and addressing growing concern around PFAS pollution, especially the governor's proposal to provide grants to communities to address their unique PFAS challenges. I would also like to thank the committee for including several other items from the governor's policy and budget recommendations, namely language requiring wastewater treatment operators to notify downstream users in the event of a partial or untreated wastewater discharge, modifications to the due date of a legislative report on PFAS pollution in the East Metro, restrictions on the use of lead and cadmium in household products used by children and families with young children, creating a revolving fund for the MPCA's voluntary investigation and cleanup program so that contaminated properties can be cleaned up and redeveloped, funding the agency's less than 0.1% over base operating increase to ensure that we can continue to meet expectations of regulated parties, extending the availability of funds for the St. Louis River Mercury TMDL, funding for railroad safety preparedness, creation of community-based brownfield programs in underserved communities. I will note that House File 4492 includes a number of appropriations and policy items, and I'll just say thank you again. There are other items that were not included from the governor's budget, and I would hope that the committee would consider adding these items, specifically funding to examine baseline levels of PFAS pollution, soil, groundwater, and surface waters, authority to ensure a sustainable funding source for MPCA's smart salting program, updating requirements for the Small Business Environmental Assistance Program and providing additional funding for grants to small businesses, funding to provide technical assistance and grants to help wastewater treatment plants upgrade their systems, finally expanding the Greater Minnesota Right Recycling and Compost Grant Program to make waste prevention and reduction projects eligible. House File 4492 contains ambitious policy language that seeks to address important issues such as environmental justice, waste reduction, and remediation of contaminated properties, including the PFAS landfill. MPCA shares the author's goals in bringing these forward. In a few cases, we see opportunities for continued conversation with the authors to ensure that the bill achieves its intended goals. We have testified on some of these items in past committee hearings, talked to the authors about them, and we are committed to continuing to work with authors to refine the language in the country. Particularly, I would note that House File 4492 includes funding for modifications to the Capital Assistance Program rules, for which we are grateful, but it does not include the accompanying policy language. That language is necessary to expand the program to include waste prevention and reduction projects and increase the $2 million per county per project limit to $5 million to aid local governments with their solid waste projects. We're happy to work with the author to see if this can be addressed in a future amendment. Thank you at this time for the opportunity to testify and for your continued partnership to support MPCA's mission to protect human health and the environment. And I'll note that we have a number of people from our team here to answer questions today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Sarah Stroman, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. You can introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon to you, Chair Hansen, and the committee. My name is Sarah Stroman, and I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to address the committee on the House Environment Omnibus Bill. I'll just note up front that we really appreciate the inclusion of many of the DNR's supplemental budget requests, along with several of DNR's policy provisions. We are committed to continuing to work with Chair Hansen and the committee, as well as the larger House of Representatives on this bill. And then I'll note that we will be submitting a letter with more detailed comments to the committee as this bill moves out to Ways and Means. Let me address some of the budget items first. As you and your committee have heard me say many times, we are in a unique moment. In the past couple of years, Minnesotans have turned to nature and our outdoor spaces for physical and mental health and outdoor recreation in record numbers. And it's really a time to make investments in our state's natural resources and in these outdoor spaces. And with the state's current financial situation, we really have that opportunity to be able to make one-time investments to meet this moment. The governor's budget to move Minnesota forward put out investments, proposed investments that provide this once-in-a-generation opportunity to address critical issues such as climate change, improving access to the outdoors, and rehabilitating and modernizing aging, and in some cases, failing outdoor infrastructure. These investments are important to make sure that we connect Minnesotans to the outdoors and maintain our high quality of life throughout the state. And we're really pleased to see the House bill including many of these investments. Specifically, I want to thank you for including funds for public water access sites, fish hatchery improvements, native plant restoration at state parks, as well as funding to restore grasslands and wetlands for carbon capture. These investments go a long way to ensure our outdoor recreation system and our infrastructure are able to meet the needs of future Minnesotans while addressing the state's climate goals. We're also supportive of the funding included to ensure that aggregate maps are available to local units of government, as well as the additional funding for No Child Left Inside, which, as everyone in this committee knows, has been a very popular program. I do have a quick note about an item that is not funded in this bill. As currently drafted, the bill does not address deficiencies in our enforcement division's budget. These are deficiencies that have resulted from recent public safety events, and these are general public safety activities for which we cannot use dedicated funds such as game and fish. And so it is important that we find some way to fund out of the general fund the $1.73 million that was included in the governor's revised supplemental budget to make our enforcement division whole and address these expenditures that have already occurred in some recent activities. Finally, I'll make a few brief comments on the policy portions of the bill. I want to thank Chair Hansen for including the lands bill, the DNR enhanced administrative penalties bill, and the recommendations of the Board of Animal Health and DNR from our Farm Survey Whitetail Co-Management Report in this omnibus bill. Those are really important measures that allow us to do proactive protection of Minnesota's resources. I do want to note a couple of non-controversial policy provisions that the agency put forward that are not found in this bill. The first of those is the tribal identification for use in obtaining hunting and fishing licenses. This is something that many of the tribal nations of Minnesota have raised with us, as the fact that currently tribal identification cannot be used to demonstrate residency for hunting and fishing licenses. And so that was the genesis of that provision. And then the other one that I would just note is the requirement for blaze orange on ground blinds. This is a hunter safety provision, and we have had issues with ground blinds not having that blaze orange visibility in the past, and so just would call out those two items of things that we would like to continue to work with the committee on and the author. There are some other policy items that we've already testified on previously, so I'm not going to elaborate here. Those will be addressed in our letter. And so I will just conclude, Madam Chair, by saying we really appreciate all of the work of the committee and the work that Chair Hansen has put into this bill. We look forward to continuing discussions to advance the DNR's mission by improving access to the outdoors, mitigating and adapting climate change, responding to drought impacts, caring for existing assets, and modernizing, expanding, and developing outdoors-related facilities to meet both current and future needs. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to be available for any questions, as well as Assistant Commissioner Meyer.
Thank you, Commissioner, for your testimony today. Next up, we have John Jashke with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. You could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. John Jashke, Executive Director, Board of Water and Soil Resources. And I'd like to thank Chair Hansen and the committee for all the work you've done thus far to put this bill together. Certainly had a lot of time to hear many topics and issues and the challenge of making sure many of them are part of your bill, as I know your first priority. A couple of things I'd like to highlight. First two are tied to the climate recommendations from the governor, as well as the parts that are in this bill, a water storage component and a soil health component. Those are both very, very important provisions for us to be able to hold water on the land, right? We were seeing greater storm events, runoff events, and frankly, we need to be able to keep more of that water where it falls rather than having it, you know, rush downstream and causing problems in places where the where the water is both sensitive as some of the land areas as well. And so that's critical. Those are each important because not only can the state funding be impactful, but we are working towards leveraging federal dollars with those funds as well from USDA. So thank you for including both of those. Also want to thank you for including the provision for the tribal liaison. Last year, there was legislation passed to require us to do that consultation government to government, and that's an important piece that we need to add to our work. And so I appreciate you including that in your bill. And then finally, the pieces that we see for the COVID response are also going to be very helpful for allowing us to catch up on some of the work that we did not get done in the previous couple of years during the growing season when we were limited to, you know, some places where we couldn't do work that was COVID risk, right? So, and then the final thing I would say are there are two provisions that we point out that we think could be a little bit more, give a little more attention. One is on the soil health piece. We think a stakeholder process is helpful. I know you have some pieces in there already that do some of that, but we think it'd be important to do that on an ongoing basis. And then finally, the soil health provision. We'd like to work with you on some flexibility on the duration of that funding, seeing as there was not yet funding in the tails for that work, because that work does continue on for a few years past the typical biennial appropriation. So we'd like to spend some time talking with you about how to make that work better. Mr. Chair and Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, thank you for the time to present your bill and to comment on it. And we'll be looking forward to working with you in the weeks ahead.
Thank you, Director Jaski, for your testimony. Next up, we have Dr. Linda Glazer from the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. Dr. Glazer, if you can identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, good afternoon, Chairman Hansen and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Linda Glazer. I'm an assistant director with the Board of Animal Health, and I'm available for questions today regarding the Article 3, the section on the Farm Survey Statute changes.
All right, thank you. Next up, we have Aurora Vautrin from the Minnesota 100% Campaign. You can introduce yourself for the record and correct the pronunciation of your last name if I got it wrong, and then proceed.
Hi there. My name is Aurora Vautrin, and I am the political director for the Minnesota 100% Campaign. Thank you, Chair Hansen and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today on the Environment and Natural Resources Omnibus Budget Bill as amended by H.F. 4492DE4. As I said, my name is Aurora Vautrin, and I'm the political director for the Minnesota 100% Campaign. We are a cross-sector, statewide, multiracial, intersectional campaign to build an equitable clean energy future for everyone in Minnesota, with almost 60 organizational endorsers to date. Minnesotans have a deep connection with our land, air, and water. We've committed to protect our environment over and over in Minnesota, but we can't take these efforts for granted. Our climate is changing, and with it, our land, air, and water is changing too. This session, our state budget surplus and this omnibus bill are opportunities to renew our commitments to protect the places we love. There are many great provisions in this bill, but in the interest of time, I want to focus our support on a few key areas. First, this bill invests in climate adaptation and resilience by investing in state-owned lands, local water management strategies, and the mapping of climate risks in the Twin Cities. These are resources communities need to plan, build, and prepare for our future. Second, it advances environmental justice initiatives designed to make our state more healthy and more equitable. It includes Representative Fooley's cumulative impacts analysis, grants for residential lead service line replacements, and state planning to clean up brownfields. These are overdue investments in overburdened communities. Third, the bill would establish statewide soil health goals and support the programs to help us meet them. These are essential strategies for sequestering carbon, protecting our soil, and preserving our ability to grow healthy food in Minnesota for generations. Thank you for your work putting together this bill, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Tony Quillis with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Quillis, if you could introduce yourself for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Tony Quillis. I'm going to, for the next couple of minutes, cover comments for a couple of trade associations and start off, Madam Chair, with the Irrigators Association of Minnesota, specifically page 45 in sections 36, 41, and 44 of the bill. And just wanted to get on the record the concerns previously addressed by Jake Wildman, the president of the Irrigators Association of Minnesota, that centered around the increased penalties of up to $40,000 and the removal of the current minor, moderate, and severe penalty provisions, and allowing criminal prosecution under Section 44 in the bill for water appropriation permits. Moving on to Article 3 in the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association, just wanted to my previous testimony on concerns about the fencing provisions, the change in 45 days to 14 days for fencing repairs, soil tests and registration requirements, but especially the oversight change of the Farm Servant Program to the Board of Animal Health to the Department of Natural Resources. And then finally, Madam Chair, as the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the last 2 years have been challenging for individuals and businesses throughout the world, the United States, and here in Minnesota. Minnesota businesses now are coming out of this pandemic and are facing even more unique challenges in terms of supply chain shortages, disruptions, inflationary concerns, workforce shortages, and rising energy costs. This on top of an environmental permitting review program that is already seen as cumbersome and time-consuming. You've heard me state before, the three things I hear from the business community are concerns about time, cost, and uncertainty in the environmental review and permitting process. And unfortunately, House File 4492 adds to all three of those concerns. The PCA fiscal note on just one of these provisions alone says that it's going to add 6 months to the environmental permitting process. This bill in its entirety adds even more time and complexity to the environmental permitting program. This legislation is going to make us uncompetitive, an outlier among surrounding states, and serve as a barrier to economic growth we so desperately need right now as we come out of this pandemic. Madam Chair and members, I recently listened to a presentation from site selectors who work for individual companies as well as consult with individual companies. And they talked to these folks about some of their expansion, economic expansions, and why they located where they did and why they didn't locate where they did. And when they got to Minnesota and started discussing Minnesota, the number one concern is the weather. And if you looked outside today, there's not a lot we can do about that. But one of the other top concerns was the environmental permitting program here in Minnesota. And I'm going to give you one example. One of the projects they talked about where they asked about factors and criteria was there was a facility that was looking to locate up in northern Minnesota. 50 to 65 jobs, $100 to $150 million capital investment is now located in North Dakota. And when they went over and looked and interviewed them and asked them, hey, why did you pick North Dakota over Minnesota? The number one reason they gave, environmental permitting program in Minnesota. So, Madam Chair, as we focus on the future, I think that we should not be adding increased mandates, rules, and regulations that are going to cost us these economic development projects and expansions. Our number one priority should not ever be forgotten is to protect the environment and natural resources of this state. But I believe we can protect the environment and focus on balanced environmental protection that will encourage economic development, growth, and investment in this state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Erin Clements with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. If you can introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Chair Wasilek, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. My name is Erin Clements, and I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment. MCEA supports the A4 amendment to HF 4492 because it takes bold steps to advance environmental justice, move us toward a zero waste materials future, and address water pollution and emerging pollutants. And I'll focus my testimony today on those three areas. The inclusion of environmental justice in this budget bill is particularly important. MCEA commends Chair Hansen, Representative Lee, and others for their work on environmental justice in these sections. MCEA has testified in favor of several of these bills in the session, and we are very much in support of these efforts, sections 55, 60 to 62, 65, and 67. We encourage continued consultation with the communities who are overburdened by pollution as this bill moves forward, so that those that are most impacted by pollution are part of the process of defining what environmental justice means and advancing solutions to injustice through the legislative process. Secondly, the Zero Waste Grant Program in Section 49 is a provision that everybody should support. The Zero Waste Grant Program establishes numerous opportunities for local governments to reduce waste, whether it's through electronic waste recycling, source reduction, market development, and organics, all of which are necessary components to improve waste management and ensure that we're not landfilling useful materials. This program allows for wide-ranging action toward zero waste programs, including research, educational programming, community outreach, infrastructure, and more, demonstrating again the versatility necessary for Minnesota to reduce waste. MCA strongly supports Article 4 that eliminates the use of PFAS forever chemicals in a variety of consumer products. These provisions protect public health. PFAS are everywhere and are found in seemingly everything. The PFAS compounds poisoning our drinking water, making our fish unsuitable for human consumption, and costing taxpayers millions of dollars in cleanup and associated costs are found in products used by Minnesotans every day. Minnesotans applying makeup, cooking breakfast, or hitting the ski trails are probably unaware that the mascara, frying pan, and ski wax that they're using may contain synthetic chemicals associated with a battery of adverse health outcomes. These provisions directly advance public health by reducing the pathways for direct exposure for Minnesotan consumers. These provisions also advance environmental health. The PFAS in makeup that runs down the bathroom sink likely travels to a wastewater treatment facility unequipped to handle PFAS. The chemicals exit the treatment facility largely unchanged, where they may be discharged to surface waters. The Pollution Control Agency recently announced its intention to add 15 more waters as impaired for these forever chemicals, bringing the total number of impaired waters to 26 across Minnesota. Unless we take proactive measures at the front end before these chemicals enter the environment, more and more of Minnesota's prized waters and fish populations will be polluted with these toxic chemicals. There's not enough time for me to go line by line through this bill, but MCA has also testified throughout this session in favor of financial assurance for feedlots, the Swan Protection Act, and a number of other policy provisions in the bill. One thing that's missing from this excellent bill is a response to chloride pollution of our waters. This committee has heard and approved HF 2908 that it would establish a certification for the Smart Salting Program. The governor's budget requested budgetary authority to collect fees for smart salting training to allow this bipartisan, successful program to continue, and it's absent currently from the DE amendment. As you do your work, please consider including the governor's recommendation for continuation of this popular and effective chloride reduction program. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on HF 4492, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Elizabeth Weffel from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. If you can introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Elizabeth Weifel, and I am testifying on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I want to thank you and all of the committee members for all the work you've put into this DE amendment. The CGMC is an organization of more than 100 cities located outside the Twin Cities metropolitan area. We have a great interest in this omnibus bill because it will have a direct impact on our member cities, who are stewards of Minnesota's waters through their wastewater, drinking water, and stormwater systems. As with any omnibus bill, there are aspects we like and aspects we don't, and I will refer you to the letter from our President Pat Boston for more detail. I do want to address one specific concern we have, and that is about lead pipes. You know, in this committee and other committees, I'm sure you've all been hearing that there is no safe level of lead in drinking water. The problems associated with lead are well known, and there is a strong need to eliminate lead pipes throughout the state. We have been urging the legislature to take action on this and applaud this committee's recognition that the state must step up and help homeowners reserve residential service lines that contain lead. We strongly oppose, however, any efforts to only fund grants for those who reside in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. The Minnesota Department of Health has stated that houses built before 1940 may have lead service lines that connect them to public water. 38% of cities in Greater Minnesota have over one-third of their housing stock built pre-1940s. That figure is 3.6% in the metro cities. We think it's irresponsible to move forward with a plan that ignores this problem outside the metropolitan area. All of our children deserve lead-free water, regardless of whether wherever they live. There's other legislation sitting in capital investment and other committees that would create statewide program to attack this problem. So there are ways that it can be done. We urge this committee, please do attack this problem. It's very serious, but do it on a statewide basis. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Tom Casey with Friends of Minnesota Scientific and Natural Areas. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tom Casey. I currently serve as the board chair of Friends of Minnesota Scientific and Natural Areas. Our organization is a Minnesota nonprofit organization, tax exempt, and formed to protect and improve Minnesota's precious scientific and natural areas, or SNAs in short. My testimony today is in support of provisions in House File 4492 as amended that provide maintenance funding for the SNA program. There are 168 SNAs located throughout Minnesota with a total of about 192 acres. Without exaggeration, SNAs are the crown jewels of Minnesota's state land base. To quote the DNR, Minnesota's SNAs are established to protect and perpetuate natural features possessing exceptional scientific or educational value in an undisturbed natural condition. Unfortunately, the SNA program is suffering from a substantial maintenance backlog. This maintenance problem is carefully explained in written testimony of record today provided by two of our board members, Bob Justrom and Ellen Fugge. They are retired DNR employees who once worked with the SNA program for many years and continue to be very familiar with current issues in the SNA program. In closing, we thank you for including SNA maintenance funding in this bill, and we thank you in advance for your continuing support as this bill moves through the legislative process. This concludes my testimony.
Thank you for your comments today. Next on the list, we have Jason Vanderbrink with CCI Federal Heavy Shot Remington and Spear Ammunition. If you could introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony. I'm not hearing him and I'm not seeing him. Oh, I see him in the Zoom room. Mr. Vanderbrink, if you're trying to talk, we can't hear you. All right, we'll see if we can figure that out. We'll move on to the next person on the list and come back to Mr. Vanderbrink. Next on the list is Tim Spreck with the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. You can introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tim Spreck, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. As we all know, House File 4492 contains approximately 7 pages of anti-deer farming provisions. The deer farming industry has testified effectively on these provisions numerous times in both the Environment and the Agriculture Committee over the past several years. As a result, I will not address these provisions individually today. Deer farmers categorically oppose these provisions, if there's any doubt. If passed, this bill would be the end of the deer farming industry. We've already lost over 100 farms in the last year or so as a result of other regulations and conditions within the industry. This is really a shame because the solution for CWD can only be found in partnership with deer farmers. Deer farmers are already way ahead through sequencing their herds' DNA and identifying CWD-resistant genetic markers. Nobody wants to talk about this because it's inconvenient for the narrative. Through selective breeding and culling, they are currently developing CWD-resistant herds. By driving them out of business, this expertise would be lost forever. Until we're ready to have an honest discussion about how to stop CWD, rather than how to destroy the deer farming industry, this problem will not go away. We should have informal hearings about genetic resistance, how we can teach and learn from each other, how we can involve the scientific committee or community in moving toward common goals. We should be discussing the role that the deer farmers have in finding a solution to CWD. We should all be working together toward a common goal rather than destroying an experienced partner who has significant expertise to share. Madam Chair, that concludes my comments for this afternoon, and I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, we have Brian Martinson from the Association of Minnesota Counties. You can introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Brian Martinson. I'm the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Analyst at the Association of Minnesota Counties, an association representing all 87 Minnesota counties. AMC has submitted a letter. AMC has submitted a letter with comments on the DE4, and you also have letters from the Solid Waste Administrators Association and the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers, both AMC affiliates. I do appreciate the opportunity to offer a few comments to highlight items and supplement those written messages. We appreciate the work of the committee. There are many positive provisions included. I would like to particularly express support for the repayment of prior transfers from the Metro Landfill Contingency Action Trust, the tax forfeited property provision, and investments in several waste management programs that will address infrastructure and public education, aggregate mapping, and tree replacement funding. One item that we neglected to address in our letter is our support of the funding starting on page 7, line 11, for the MPCA expedited rulemaking to increase grant limits and expand eligibility of the Solid Waste Capital Assistance Program. Thank you for including this. It will improve the already important waste management tool. AMC would like to ask the author to consider increasing the investment made in identifying sources of PFAS contained on lines 3.14 and 3.17, and to target funding for support of publicly owned facilities to participate in the recently released PFAS monitoring program. This is a voluntary program, but costs may be a barrier for some. The cost estimates for all publicly owned landfill and waste-to-energy facilities to participate is estimated to be over $2 million. We also support including funds necessary to cover the needs of publicly owned water facilities as well. AMC and MACFO appreciate the chair's efforts to address our concerns with implementation of an abandoned manure storage inventory. If adopted, the A8 amendment to the amendments sections addressing this work would go a long way to making this effort workable. We still are gathering feedback on the A8 provisions, but remain concerned about the potential to draw attention away from the regular feedlot program work. An effort to increase the base funding for the delegation program would allow counties to dedicate more staff time to feedlot work long-term. Finally, I want to restate our opposition to moving forward with the drainage registry contained in Article 2, Section 34. Drainage work already requires notice and public involvement components. We should look to those provisions rather than creating new reporting and wait periods. The proposal would prevent regular maintenance and emergency repairs from being completed in a timely manner, which would result in property and environmental damage. We support stakeholders having a thoughtful discussion on this at the drainage work group this summer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to loop back to Jason Vanderbrink if he is available. Mr. Vanderbrink, if you're available, if you can unmute yourself and proceed with your testimony. I am not seeing Not hearing anything. Give it another second here. All right, since he's not available to testify, we will move on to member questions, comments at this point. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions and then a number of comments as well. I'll just start out and we'll see how the conversation goes this afternoon. I may have more later. But my first is for the commissioners, and I appreciate that we did get some brief feedback from them today. But I am going to point out to them and ask if they want to provide some feedback that last year, in fact, it's been less than a year ago, their governor signed into law a two-year budget. And here we are, you know, going through this bill, a budget that fully funded their agencies. And I guess the feedback I'm looking for is, in light of that, why are they back here asking for more money? Earlier in the day, we were debating a bill relative to a drought. You know, maybe that's something that we could bring into the conversation, but there's so much here in this bill that is, or has, at least near as I can tell, nothing to do with an urgency. I would love to hear from any of those that testified in support of the bill why we need, as I said, with a two-year budget already signed into law, more money.
I don't think we'll say anybody who testified because that would probably be a long time, but we'll see if the commissioners, either Commissioner Kessler or Commissioner Strowman, could chime in on that one for their specific agencies. Commissioner Kessler, I see you unmuted first, so why don't we have you go first?
Yeah, Madam Chair, can you hear me now? I switched to a different device. Okay,
yep,
I'm sorry about the audio situation earlier. Who knows what's going on? So thank you to Representative Heinzman for the question and the opportunity to speak to the historic moment. I think we all recognize that there is a biennial budget process, and we appreciate the legislature working with agencies and the governor last year. I think the requests that we're making now, we do believe there is an urgency around things like the climate crisis and the evolving understanding of PFAS. And given the historic nature of the surplus and the opportunity to bring supplemental budget items forward, we thought that these help meet the expectations of the people that we're talking to. We regularly interact with municipal leaders. I was in Red Wing just this morning where municipal leaders were asking for additional support for their work to mitigate flooding that is driven entirely by more increasing intense rain events. So we regularly hear from people who are challenged at the local level, whether they're municipal leaders or businesses, around PFAS and climate adaptation needs. And we've put forward a supplemental budget proposal that helps address those needs that we're hearing from others.
Commissioner Strowman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Heinzman. I appreciate the opportunity to address this question. Because I think it is a really important issue, and I do want to draw a distinction between what was funded last year in our biennial budget and as part of our operating budget and what the administration has put forward and many of the investments that the House has currently in the bill and why we're supportive of them. These are all one-time investments. They are above and beyond our operating budget. They are investments that have long been needed, and I will say I think our position on these items is not new in terms of the investment that is needed in our fish hatcheries, in our public water access, in our public lands to make sure that they are managed for, as Commissioner Kessler said, the urgency of climate issues, but also to meet the demands for recreation that we have seen vastly increase over the last couple of years. And so, one, I would say this is in response to those issues that we have seen continue to grow since the biennial budget was passed and we received those dollars. These are for things that budget does not cover. They are not operating. They are one-time investments. And they are things that without this investment, we are not going to continue to be able to provide the level of service that Minnesotans have come to expect. So for the large number of boaters that we have in the state of Minnesota, we are not going to be able to provide adequate boat access for some of those folks without investment in our public water access sites. And that is above and beyond just the maintenance, sort of the operating, the putting in and out the docks and the portable restrooms and those kinds of things. But there are many of those sites that need upgrades to make sure that boaters can do good AIS practices, that we have stormwater management practices to keep our lakes healthy. Issues that have emerged since those pieces of infrastructure were initially built. And so again, given the fact that we have a surplus in the state of Minnesota, we can afford to invest in some of these things that Minnesotans value greatly and are using in huge numbers. That is why we put this forward this year. So there is a pretty bright line distinction between these one-time investments in things versus what came forward last year in our biennial budget process and what you would see next year in a biennial budget process.
And I see Director Jasky has unmuted. Director Jasky, if you want to chime in on this as well.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Members, yeah, I won't go into Commissioner Kessler and Stroman described, some of the rationale behind the proposal from the governor's office. Here's what I would say is that a couple of the things that are in the letter that we provided, so you can take a look at that too as you get the opportunity. But two of them, talk about leveraging federal dollars, right? Because they've appropriated and made available more money, but we're only going to get those federal dollars if we have state funds to compete with other states to get those funds. And of course, the bill has some other proposals in there that also would do more of that as well. So I think that's really important to consider. Those are one-time opportunities to bring federal money to Minnesota to, to provide, assets and benefits to our citizens right now. And a couple of other items that are in our area are things that we did propose last year. The tribal liaison was something that was passed into law last year. We had to bring it back this year to get the funding to do it. And the COVID recovery, we tried going down the path of seeking that through the federal process, but it was not available. So we have to go now through the state process to accomplish that. So some of them are tied to things that were in the mix last year. Others are, as Commissioner Kessler and Stroman indicated, opportunities that Minnesota can really take advantage of. Thank you.
Tim Heinzman, did you have anyone else you wanted to respond to that, or do you have a?
No, I needed to hear from each of those that spoke, so I'll address each of their comments if it's okay, Madam Chair.
Yep, go ahead, Representative Heinzman.
So, that's quite honestly the answers that I, to some extent, was expecting, but there was also some more there that I believe I should probably highlight, because there are people watching what we're doing today, and in light of the fact that we do have a budget that was passed, like I said, less than 1 year ago. And we're getting some feedback now on the supplemental, which of course, everybody expects there to be some adjustments to the budget in the supplemental, but instead we're getting over in the neighborhood of $250 million of additional spending in this bill. And that it's a lot of money. And the folks are asking, well, what did we miss? And the answers, I think, are really helpful, because it sounds like, as I'm hearing from MPCA, that the answer is that today there's a climate crisis that apparently they weren't aware of last year. And we're basing the ask on a suddenly appearing issue that needs to be addressed this year that couldn't have been thought of last year. And I don't mean to be sarcastic, but it's a little weak. And then when we're hearing from DNR, I'm hearing that we're not going to be able to provide services to the level that Minnesotans expect unless this supplemental is passed. Well, excuse me, but shouldn't that have been addressed in last year's budget request? If that's the case, we're not going to be able to meet the expectations of those folks that are looking to enjoy the outdoors, and that services are not going to be there in the budget that was brought forward by your governor and signed into law. Okay. You know, that to me is disappointing to hear those kinds of answers as we're here going through this bill. You know, and I'm not going to ask for additional feedback on that. I think we need to move on, but I do appreciate the answers, and hopefully those are things that when we put together another bill going forward in 23, that services are addressed, and some of the stuff, I guess, that is popping up as it relates to climate is also addressed in the budget request in the budget year. And that in the supplemental following that in 24, maybe we can learn a few lessons from what we're doing here today and address actual issues that come up as a crisis of sorts and address those and be a little bit more more precise in that. And I'll just move on.
Representative Heintzman, I know Representative Hansen wanted to also chime in on this. Would you be okay with him responding, and then we can move on to your other questions?
It's okay. I'd like to move on to my next questions.
All right, we'll move on to your next questions, and Chair Hansen will have some time to talk, so he can address those things in a bit.
I'm sure, Madam Chair, that Chair Hansen will address my comments. But if it's okay, I'd like to continue on with my questions for Representative Hansen.
Yep, go ahead, Representative Heintzman.
All right. Representative Hansen, last Tuesday we did the walkthrough, if I'm getting my date right, and there were many provisions that, as we were going through, were referenced to have been in last year's bill. And here they are again for a second try. And I think arguably I can suggest that if those things were rejected last year, and were controversial then, they're going to be just as controversial today. And on top of that, we have a number of provisions that I know, and I know we could debate this for a long time as to whether or not the provisions that are new in this bill deserve to move forward in this omnibus or not. We'll probably have a long conversation about that going forward, but I am going to try and press the bill author as to how can we possibly expect this to go forward now, bringing back provisions that were unsuccessful, very controversial last session. Now we have what I think I can argue is even a more controversial package of provisions.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to answer that question. You know, we have an election certificate that provides us for a 2-year session. And, you know, our responsibility to our constituents is to keep trying. If an issue is important to our constituents, and if an issue continues to get worse or better, we have a responsibility to try to address it. I can't help what the other body does. They can oppose things, they can support things. But we do have our votes here. We have the opportunity to do better. We have the opportunity to try again. Everyone on this committee has that opportunity. We have that opportunity to try again. And so if the Senate knocked it down last year, why not try again? Are we just supposed to say, well, they have deemed it controversial because it's from the House, or because it's from a Democratic majority, or because it's from individuals? Our responsibility is to represent our constituents, and that means trying to pass a good bill. And this is a good bill. two of the big ticket items that are here is the MLCAT repayment. So to answer the previous question, we have talked about that for 3 years. We had a report in the first year that there was a Democratic majority. Senator Ingebrigtsen and I agreed on having a report. 40-page report came out, documented a raid on an account that Minnesotans paid into. And that raid was promised to be repaid, and it was not. With one-time money, we can repay that fund that will help with environmental cleanup into the future. Back in the early 2000s, there was also a raid on lottery in lieu of money. And that has not been repaid. So what we have in the tails brings that back to the way it was. And we had strong testimony that was what needed to be done. Now, I can't help if other people don't like it. I can't help if they want to do something else. But we can offer a package here which fixes past problems and lays a foundation for the future. As I mentioned before, our state is changing and we're learning more. We learn more every day about the effects of contamination on PFAS, neonicotinoids, impacts on our pollinators, and plastics. Just yesterday, new information that human beings have plastics in their lungs. Now we can sit back and say, oh, we should have took care of that last year. Oh, I guess we debated it. We get paid every month for 2 years, but we should only work the first few months of the first year. We should work every day for Minnesotans as legislators, every day trying to make our state better. Now you can disagree with that, but that's our effort here. Our effort to try to make our state better every day.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe we can have a bit of a dialogue today, Representative Hansen, because, you have an election certificate. We all do here as members of this committee. But the reality is so does all those folks that you just mentioned in the other body. And you mentioned we have a bill here today. Quite honestly, as I'm hearing from those that would typically have an opportunity to weigh in on the process, they feel like, and the comments I'm hearing is that this bill was, to a great extent, created in a bubble. And we can all go back and forth, but the old saying about the provisions, I might apply to the provisions that were heard last year that are now being brought back again, is going back to some kind of idea that, you know, if we just run it through enough times, maybe we can convince people that a bad idea is a good idea. Maybe it's just a bad idea. And if people have been watching this committee and its hearings from day one, the minority has had virtually no bills heard in this committee. And we've had very little accepted in a bipartisan way coming from those folks that are being massively impacted by the provisions of this bill. And Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I don't think that this is gonna be going anywhere. I think that we're gonna have a very robust debate on the provisions of this bill when it reaches the House floor. And I hope at that time, maybe something will change. Because at the moment, it doesn't appear that there is a real effort from the majority to try to come up with a bipartisan compromise that can move forward. And if I'm wrong, Representative Hansen, I'm happy to take correction on that today.
Representative Hansen, did you have something you wanted to say to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, members and Minnesotans, we've been meeting since January 31st. We've been hearing four or five bills a day. I don't understand if that's a bubble by actually having hearings, actually having testimony, building a bill based on that in the public. We've had those same hearings last year, building a bill in public with testimony, an opportunity for testimony. So I understand that the world is changing. I understand that Minnesota is changing. I understand that the people who may have issues and concerns are changing. And I think this bill reflects those changes. So the old guard might not like it. But there is a new guard. There are new Minnesotans. There are new people paying attention. New people every day who I think will like this bill. A bill that was developed in the public through hearings, testimony, and input.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Just to continue the dialogue, and I'll probably be coming to the end of my comments, but Representative Hansen, the idea of this bill being created in a bubble, that wasn't my words. That's what I'm hearing outside of this conversation that we're having today. People that feel like they were locked out of the process. And I'll give you an example. When we're talking about what are the provisions relative to PFAS and California language that's virtually identical to what appears in the bill, except for an issue as it related to intent. We debated that vigorously, yet here we are with a bill that is, or a provision in this bill that goes right back to fines and penalties, as opposed to working with people to try to figure out a solution. There's no input being taken during the many hearings that you mentioned, Representative Hansen. It's simply my way or the highway. And I hope that that changes, because there's a lot of good stuff in here as an idea, but the enforcement and the lack of interest in any kind of dialogue that could bring about a softening of how that bill would, or that provision would be enforced, it doesn't appear that the majority is listening. And so I have to bring it up and say, I hope that, as opposed to what some has described as somewhat a lecture from this committee on a number of occasions, that we can have a dialogue and actually make improvements to help move these issues forward. Because there is a lot of agreement on many of the emerging issues of concern, like PFAS, like some of the infrastructure that needs to be replaced, that DNR has mentioned. But at the same time, it doesn't appear that there's really an opportunity to get at the concerns that the minority has tried to address. So I'll leave it right there, Mr. Chair, and I'm sure there's a number of comments coming, and if there's more that needs to be brought up, we'll continue to dialogue.
All right, next up, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm glad that there was a little bit of further explanation of what was meant by the bill being created in a bubble. And I think, you know, I'm an attorney, and my brain always wants to be logical, and I'm always trying to follow where the logic is. And I was really lost during a lot of that. And I think, you know, maybe we have different definitions of the word bubble, but I think, you know, having a vigorous debate during committee is the opposite of something happening in a bubble. That's actually happening in public, recorded for everybody to see in real time. So I think that's actually the opposite of a bubble. And I think if there's disagreement, that's the majority choosing what to include in their bill. And that's, I mean, none of us should expect anything different. It wasn't any different when we had a different party in control. When there's disagreement, we include the things in our bill that we believe in. And we have the votes today, and I will be excited to vote for this bill. And I think this idea, you know, and maybe folks aren't used to it. Maybe there's members of this committee who haven't had to do this kind of work, but there's negotiation that happens down the line. That's the conference committee. So the idea that like there's some obligation to compromise values at this step in the process doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think also this idea that, well, we tried this once and it didn't end up in the final negotiation, so we should just give up on it. I mean, if women had given up on the right to vote the first time they were told no, half of us wouldn't be here. If we had, when we ended, there's all kinds of processes that and things that have happened in history, and you don't just you're told no once and you give up. I don't think that's the nature of any of us. I don't think any of us would have won election or be doing this work if we gave up the first time somebody told us no thanks. And so I appreciate the dedication to these issues, because over time, even in the time I've been in office, we have seen change, and we've come a long way in this committee. And I think my constituents, not lobbyists, my constituents, the young people in my community are standing up and demanding that we do something about climate, that we do something about chemical pollution, that we do something about plastics. That's what I'm hearing from my constituents. And as we talk about the new guard, those young people are the new guard, and I'm just fine following their lead and taking my cues from them. Now I want to actually talk about the bill, because we haven't actually talked about the bill, and I'm really excited about this bill. I think, as always, Chair Hansen, you've put together a good bill that hits on all the things that are within the purview of this committee, that both small and large. I know that there are members of this committee who didn't care for the discussion about rough fish and the no junk fish provision. But I actually hear from people who are really excited about that. And I think finding joy in our work in protecting all of the species on this planet is a really, really cool thing. And I'm really glad that was included. I think as to the enhanced penalties for people who violate permits, I thank you for including that in the bill. If you're not violating your permit, you don't have to worry about it. Follow the law and you won't have to worry about it. It's that simple. And so I think, both the small things with the fish that we want to protect, and the big things with holding people accountable, whether it's polluters or people who violate permits, all those things are really important. And I'm really glad they're included. And thank you, Chair Hansen. I know a lot of people have felt included in the way that this bill is put together, as always. In the way that we do our work, and I appreciate your leadership, and I appreciate our able vice chair in managing these conversations, even when sometimes they're difficult. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Next up, we'll go to Representative Becker, and then we'll go to Representative Lee. Representative Becker.
We are live, so thank you. Yes, members. One of the things that I've heard, there's quite a few things that concerns me about the bill, but the one that I've received the greatest, and it's not just like one or two, but significant feedback, is House File 4274. I know we talked about that, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, maybe a little longer. Time flies when you're having fun like this in St. Paul. But I was talking to a landowner, not a significant, but a small landowner. I've been talking to county officials on this. But House File 4274, they summarized it this way. It is really an attack on the existing drainage law. I know the chair, Hansen, and I, we had a little discussion about this a couple weeks ago. And I get it that we all have vested interests in our resources, but to put it simply, all the drainage ditches were built, paid for, and maintained by the landowners that directly benefit from the ditch. The drainage ditch is owned by the beneficial landowners and managed by local government officials, because the folks in Travers County know the lay of the land, or Wilkin County or Stevens County, much better than someone up in St. Louis County. We do not have the experience in St. Louis County or Ramsey County because we're on the western part of Minnesota, next to North Dakota and South Dakota. And the local drainage issues are solved by the local people because they're the ones that paid for it. I would illustrate it this way. I would suspect all of us on this committee and most of the viewers probably own some type of a vehicle. We're going to make an assumption that they own a car, maybe a pickup. And you asked for you to get a change of oil, you have to get a permit from somebody in Ramsey County, but you live in Moorhead, Minnesota. That just doesn't make sense. And so forth. And what really doesn't make sense is this duplicate of service. When we had an issue in Stevens County, there were people who requested, it was County Ditch 18. There was people outside of the district that requested that information. The county officials of Stevens County provided that information. So it seems like a lot of duplicate of information. If interested parties did not get public notice, they can make a request. Counties are already required to share this information under the Minnesota Data Protection Act. So to me, it's another agency doing the work that someone else is already doing. And us taxpayers, or all of us are taxpayers, but the taxpayers are all already feeling a burden from the inflation that we're seeing and the raising cost of just living. And now we want government to do duplicate service. So this is the feedback that I've got from folks in the district that I represent. This is not something that I came up with, which of course I agree with. So for that reason, other reasons, I will not be supporting. I don't think that surprises anybody. It's not like an aha moment, but I do want to share just some very brief discussions that I have. Heck, when I was giving a speaking right now, one of my county administrators were calling me dealing with this issue. So it is a concern, and I would love to have more of a vetting process than what we've seen with this. And thank you, Madam Chair and members, for allowing me to share that. Thank you.
Representative Hansen, did you have any comments in relation to that piece?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was Representative Lippert's piece, and I think at one of the earlier meetings I had asked people to work with Representative Lippert. I would defer to him to answer the question and hope that he and Representative Backer could discuss, but Representative Lippert.
Representative Lippert, did you have anything you wanted to say in response to that concern?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Backer, I'd be happy to talk with you more about that particular provision. I think there are people downstream that are concerned and just want to make sure that there's a central place where projects are listed and there's better information that's available to the public. So that's what the provision is about.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. Members, I do want to direct your attention to an email that provided the comments that Mr. Vanderbrink was unable to make because of some technical difficulties. So you did get an email if you want to check that out. Next, I see Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Hansen, for bringing this proposal forward and also the inclusion of the cumulative impacts into the delete all amendment. I think that it is time for Minnesota to recognize the disproportionate impact of pollution, specifically air pollution, to our indigenous, our communities of color throughout the entire state. And really look at, you know, what can we do to make sure that they don't have to bear this burden anymore. And, you know, when we hear comments today in committee about how this bill was put together in a vacuum or in a bubble or whatnot, think about, you know, our communities of color, our indigenous communities, and those communities that are left out of the process because we have not created a process that's open for them to contribute and talk about the harms that pollution has caused to them for their public, you know, for their health, you know, for their safety and all of that. And, you know, when we think about the current processes in place, whether we get this proposal through or not, it's not working for communities of color, as we have seen in that presentation from the two professors from the University of Minnesota, where air pollution, you know, disparities are much greater based off of race than by any income. And these are, you know, hard facts and data that we have seen across the country and here in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, my hope is that, you know, the agencies before us today continue to work with our frontline communities who are impacted by pollution, whether we get, you know, any or all of these proposals going forward, because they are dying on a daily basis because of this. You know, one of these statistics, people are dying because of air pollution at a higher rate than by traffic. And so if that's not a cause of concern for everyone, then I don't know what is. And to one of the comments earlier from a public testifier about, you know, the responsibility of the MPCA, I just want to remind everyone that the MPCA on their website, they said that the Pollution Control Agency is a state agency committed to ensuring that every Minnesotan has healthy air, sustainable lands, clean water, and a better climate. And so this should be the primary responsibility of the Pollution Control Agency. And the proposal that we have in there around cumulative impact gets to that end. And, you know, we had the opportunity from the hearing last Friday until now to work on addressing some of the concerns that were raised in the hearing last Friday. No one reached out to me to offer any suggestions on how we can move forward with making this proposal work for everyone. And so we just want to put that on the record. Madam Chair and Chair Hansen, really appreciate the opportunity to, you know, just provide this feedback about how important this proposal is for our frontline communities as we move forward, because, you know, they're sick and tired of, you know, being impacted by air pollution and dying every day because of air pollution. And so I'm hopeful that we can move forward as a state to addressing some of these pollution concerns that communities of colors and indigenous communities face in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
All right. I'm not seeing any other hands. Just to give members a heads up on what the plan is for the agenda, we are now, if we don't have any further questions or comments from members, we're going to move to markup of the bill. I don't see any other questions or comments from members. Representative Hansen, did you want to say something right now, or are you ready to move to the markup of the bill?
I'm, Madam Chair, I'm ready to move the A8 amendment.
All right. The A8 is an author's amendment. Will you please describe the amendment for us, Representative Hansen?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And the A8 amendment is based on the testimony we received during the walkthrough. So I'm going to walk through the changes we've made based on the public input in the public meeting 2 days ago. First is the amendment does the following. It updates a rider for the grants to counties for manure storage area reporting. It adds criteria for dispersing the grants and extends the availability of the appropriation. So we worked with the counties based on their concerns. You heard testimony to that earlier this afternoon, and we provide some money to make sure that the tasks we are asking of them as they look for liquid storage in abandoned but not yet closed sites to protect water quality and the environment. The DNR asked us for more time to complete the rough fish report, the report that Representative Becker Finn's bill provided. So we are providing more time. We reduced the amount of money for the DNR's swan resting area designation, making that a pilot project. That's where the money came from to go to the counties for their manure storage work. We also transferred more money into the EAB trees provision so that we would have more money for helping out with responding to emerald ash borer, which we've had multiple testimony over years on. Secondly, we allow local and tribal governments to be eligible for the AIS grants. We got that information from both interest groups, the lake associations, and I believe also the DNR. We increase the amount of money for EAB grants through the DNR. We make a technical change to the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District, the exemption on pollinator lethal pesticide ordinance required. That was requested by the district to Representative Jordan's bill from last year. So we are actually changing last year's bill based on public input. Next up, we delete the subdivision on soil health cost share program as it related to carbon markets, something that's not yet ready for prime time. We delete section 47 from Article 2, the stormwater infrastructure grant program. It's our understanding that may result in this bill being considered a bonding bill. So we are hoping that Representative Lee and the bonding committee can take that. We're concerned about having a jurisdictional problem there. We add the air toxics emission reporting section from Representative Lee's House File 3146 that was inadvertently left out of the bill. I do want to take this moment to thank Ms. Taylor and Mr. Hagemeyer for their awesome work working over the weekend and the work that they do for the people of Minnesota. We replaced the abandoned feedlot and manure storage area language requiring a list with suggested language from the AMC. We add requirements to the air toxics emission rulemaking provision. Again, more replace the abandoned feedlot manure storage area language requiring certain reporting with suggested language from the AMC to develop a list of abandoned manure storage. We have a number of technical corrections, correcting section numbers, revisers, and then also renumbering based on that. That is the A8 amendment, and I would move that.
Representative Hansen has moved the A8 amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? Not seeing any. So all those in favor of the A8 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. All right, we got another amendment, this one from Representative Eklund. I believe you have the A1 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment and explain it for us briefly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the H4492A1 amendment. And this amendment takes money from the dedicated all-terrain vehicle counts in the Natural Resources Fund. The first one is for a grant of $500,000 to St. Louis County, who is a fiscal agent. It's for right-of-way acquisition, design, right-of-way acquisition, permitting, and construction of trails with the Voyager Country ATV trail system. The second grant in this amendment, Madam Chair, is another $500,000 grant to the City of St. Louis County for the same things for design, right-of-way acquisition, permitting, and construction of a new trail plan within the Prospector Trail System. And both these are coming from dedicated accounts, Madam Chair.
Representative Eklund has moved the A1 amendment. Representative Hansen, do you have a position on the amendment?
I support the amendment.
Any further discussion for members on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Eklund has the next one as well, the A5 amendment. Would you like to explain that one for us, Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A5 amendment. And Madam Chair, members, this amendment came out of conversation with a constituent who has a logging operation in northern Minnesota. And it's a matter of whether you can, whether it's something is postmarked or not as far as paying his fees and paying the interest on the fees if they don't get it there in time. And what we're finding out is a lot of our northern Minnesota post offices are only open for an hour or two a day, so they got to hurry to get in there and get things done. And then with COVID going on and some things just slipped in the mail and with the pandemic going on, so this is just to fix it up so they can get in, get their lease payment or their payments postmarked, and the DNR was agreeable on it. I want to thank them for the help in getting this drafted.
Representative Eklund has moved the A5 amendment. Any comments, Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would support this. I would note we may need, when it's in ways and means to adjust any fiscal cost for this in the next committee, Representative Eklund.
Any further discussion? Not seeing any hands going up. So all those in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Next up, we have Representative Lippert. I believe you have the A6 amendment. Would you like to move that and explain it for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So after a conversation with the Nursery and Landscape Association and others, there's consensus that the existing language around planting climate-adapted tree species is sufficient, so I withdraw the A6 amendment.
Okay, Representative Lippert has withdrawn the A6 amendment. Now we are moving to the final vote on the DE4 amendment as amended. Representative Hansen, would you move the DE4 amendment as amended?
I will move the DE4 amendment as amended.
All those in favor of the DE4 amendment as amended, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say no.
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 The motion prevails and the DE4 amendment as amended is adopted. Representative Hansen, did you have any closing comments for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a great bill. I think I'd encourage folks to read the bill, look at the investments it makes. It does right past wrongs where there have been raids on funds over the years, and finally can restore them to the way they should be. That's an important, critical thing. It has a significant investment in conservation, soil and water conservation. It has an added benefit of carbon sequestration. Long-term carbon sequestration. The CREP money puts the roots in the ground for a long time, and it brings in 2-to-1 federal dollars, 2-to-1 federal dollars, so it expands that effort, and there are willing landowners who want to enroll. That investment in soil and water conservation has extra benefits as well. Wildlife and water quality throughout the state are benefited with that investment in conservation. Contaminants. Relating to contaminants, we know, and we've heard over and over, there is no safe level of lead. And yes, we have a provision in here in policy looking at lead on certain wildlife management areas, looking at picking up lead sinkers, investing in trying to get lead out of the environment, including lead service lines. And I should note clearly that the Metropolitan Council is within our jurisdiction. That is why the lead service line replacement language is only for the Met Council. This committee does not have the jurisdiction for the Public Facilities Authority. And so those provisions were sent into the bonding committee and have been heard there. Those investments in trying to get the lead out, whether it's with sinkers or with pipes through which the water that we drink goes through, are in this bill. PFAS. Vice Chair Wasowick has a comprehensive article in the bill that tries to look at prevention. Prevention is better than cleanup, particularly with forever chemicals. I applaud her for her work on that. Those contaminants are with us and in us. And if we can prevent them getting into the environment and into us, it will help us all. So conservation, contaminants, but also investments that help us with climate are in this bill. I want to thank the speaker for providing us with that flexibility to have significant investments and to have money in the tails to resolve the lottery in lieu of raid from almost a generation ago. We've taken input in committee. We just adopted an amendment that adjusted some of the based on the input we've heard. We will continue to take input as it moves through the process and in the floor. But each of us has that responsibility to try to do better for Minnesota. So I ask for your support for the bill as amended.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 4492 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee and direct the nonpartisan staff to make any technical corrections to conform with the action and intent of the committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Vice Chair Wasowick.
Wasowick, aye.
Wasowick votes aye. Representative Heintzman.
No.
Heintzman votes no. Representative Akam.
Aye.
Akam votes aye. Representative Ackland?
No.
Ackland votes no. Representative Backer?
Backer votes no.
Backer votes no. Representative Becker-Finn?
Aye.
Becker-Finn votes aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund votes aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher votes aye. Representative Green?
No.
Green votes no. Representative Igo?
No.
Igo votes no. Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Jordan votes aye. Representative Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Keeler votes aye. Representative Lee?
Lee, aye.
Lee votes aye. Representative Lippert?
Lippert, aye.
Lippert votes aye. Representative Lewick?
No.
Lewick votes no. Representative Morrison?
Morrison, aye.
Morrison votes aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, no.
Nelson votes no. Representative Tice?
Tice votes no.
Tice votes no. Madam Chair, there are 11 ayes and 8 nays.
The motion prevails and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Chair Hansen, did you have any final closing comments as we end our time as a committee here?
I want to thank the staff, both nonpartisan and partisan, and thank all members for their participation. We may be back again during the session. We may not, but hope people have a great break. Thank you all for your work.
And with no further business before the committee today, we are adjourned.